Welcome to a new episode of PMCA Research Chat. I'm your host and PMCA Research Chair, Eric Schmoyer, from Barrichello. Our objective is to form and educate our listeners on current and previous research committee-funded topics and personalities. Please subscribe and like us on your podcast service. Check us out at PMCA.com, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
Welcome to another episode of Research Chat. Joining me today is Michael Jenks, Senior Technologist at IFF Innovation, Creation, and Design. He provides technical support and solutions to customers in North America in the areas of nutrition bars, snacks, and confectionery applications. So, Michael, is there anything you want to do to blow up either what you do, where you are, or anything at this point?
I work with customers, and when I say customers, I mean brand owners or basically people that buy our products, not end consumers. So consumer manufacturers is what
business,
I say.
Business, marketing, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I'm out of St. Louis, Missouri. I do a little bit of internal work, like kind of on the R&D side, but mostly it's customer facing.
Basically, you're going from conception to plant trials kind of thing.
Yeah, I do a lot of support on plant trials when needed.
Do you have a primary focus? I know you said bars, snacks, confectionery applications. Is there a particular focus you have?
I do all of it. And within our group, I'm the person that takes care of confectionery the most. And by confectionery, we talk, you know, it's sugar-based as well as fat-based. So, you know, like gummies as well as chocolate and things like that and fillings as well.
So the scope of this discussion is going to be probiotics in particular, but if there's other things you want to throw in there, fibers or whatever, feel free to jump in any time. As far as probiotics go, what kind of health claims, just for edification of listeners, are people making on probiotics?
There's a wide variety of them. Immunity health, respiratory health. The ones that we're working on most recently is cognitive health, things like that. But yeah, basically anything for your health. Digestive health is a big one as well. That's probably the largest area wherever you see probiotics in food as well as dietary supplements, which is the biggest portion of where probiotics go into. Food is kind of emerging market, I would say.
Jumping on that, who makes, approves, or tests these claims? Are you working with institutions? Is there a separate entity that does this? I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there that probably look at something like this and go, okay, how does this actually get to where it needs to be so that we can label it as such?
Yeah, it's kind of a complicated procedure, really, but ultimately the customer, and by customer, I mean the brand owner is the one that makes the claims. We work with the customer on clinical trials. So we partner with different universities or academic institutions, and we sponsor trials, and we use that data to support any of the claims that the customer wants to put on the front of the package. And then we also will test the product over shelf life if needed. So we would store it in our facility, and we would enumerate it as time goes on.
Okay. Is there any particular institution that's standing out that does this? Is it anybody that does food science?
All over the world, really. I think the one that we work with the most is University of Wisconsin-Madison, just because that's where our facility for manufacturing probiotics is at. But as far as other institutions, I've also seen Griffith University, University of Virginia, Duke, all over the world, basically.
Okay. So when you're creating these items, I'm going to assume you start with the application and desired claims, try and fit a product to that need?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes the brand owner will come to us with an idea and we have to refine it to get it to where it needs to be. And we'll go from there. Other times they'll come with a final product and say, just add probiotics into it. And we might have to adjust the formula to make the probiotics survive in that environment. So there's many different ways that we can go about it.
So you've got different strains that apply to different functions, applications, and they all have limitations, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's correct. There's two main categories, lactic acid probiotics and spore-forming probiotics. By far, the lactic acid-based probiotics are the ones that have more clinical data supporting them for things like immune health. So for example, B. lactis at a count of 2 billion CFUs is clinically proven to show good immune health support. but also there's other ones as well. So L-rhamnosis at 6 billion is shown to have good immune benefits in infants. And actually, we've given that to my son as from our pediatrician as advised us for that particular strain. But these lactic acid probiotics do not survive as well as the spore-forming probiotics in different applications. So when I'm talking about that, I'm talking about higher water activity or lower pH or temperature. They are not as robust in their survivability as something like the spore-forming probiotics, which can be basically put into almost anything and can survive. And an example of that is the B. subtilis that can survive in higher water activities and lower pH conditions. But it does, again, it doesn't have the same clinical support behind it. Sometimes the brand owner just wants to have a content claim on their package, and they're not really necessarily as concerned about the clinical research.
I'm going to be coming at you with, we've run probiotics in the past, and I'm going to be coming at you with applications questions because we kind of had to figure it out as we went along, because this was, 10 years ago. Obviously, there's temperature parameters for the lactobacillus. Can you speak to that at all? I mean, obviously, chocolate's perfect because it's low enough in temperature, it's not an issue. There's no water activity to speak of. But as you get into things like gummies or hard candy or anything like that, now you're talking about encapsulation or something along those lines?
Yeah, that's correct. You hit the nail on the head on that one. The lactic acid bacteria, basically perfect for chocolate applications. And we've done a lot of work in chocolate and cream filling as well, as long as the final application has a low enough water activity. But in things like a gummy, microencapsulation will work. That's still kind of in the infancy. We're still doing some research and development on that particular area. But for the time being, I would recommend the spore forming like B. subtilis for that kind of application. And that there are some products like that on the market currently in gummies.
Do they overdose to hit the CFUs you're looking for, or the, you know, the bacterial, the colonies are looking for?
Yeah, actually we do. If in food systems, we do overdose about 10 times the amount. That way, at the end of shelf life, you get the claim that is supported by the clinical data.
That was a problem or an issue we were consistently dealing with is we knew what we were putting in at the front end, and we were chronically testing after where we were so we could make sure that our adjustments were fine. And it's kind of like dealing with polyphenols as well. You know, make sure you're dosing at a certain level to get more than you expect. Storage was also an issue. At that time, the lactobacillus we were working with had to be kept cold prior to use. Is that still the case these days, or are they shelf-stable?
In the actual probiotic itself, yeah, we do recommend keeping it either refrigerated or frozen just to extend that shelf life for the actual powder itself, the probiotics. Once it gets into the final food form, obviously, refrigerated is probably going to be better, but realistically, we know that customers are not going to probably refrigerate their chocolate. So,
right. Theoretically, if they follow the instructions on a spec sheet or something, it's going to say something along the neighborhood of 72 degrees or lower F with relatively low humidity. So there's really no issue unless there's a temp spike. So
that's correct. Yes.
One of the questions I always had was, is there a downside to too much? Let me give you an example. The question I always dealt with was flushing or dedicated lines. If probiotic gets loose in your facility, I know there's FDA regs, there's FSMA issues, but is there really a downside if something else gets quote unquote contaminated with probiotics?
That's a great question. I think the biggest downside, if you're talking about lactic acid based bacteria, probiotics, then there's the only real downside is the cost. Basically, if you're going to be overdosing more than 10 times, you're adding exponential cost to your final product.
Right.
But they are relatively easy to clean up. There's not going to be any spoilage organisms or anything like that you could just use your normal cleaning procedure. However, right. the spore-forming probiotics are a little bit harder to kill, and you might need to have some kind of dedicated line or some special cleaning equipment, and we can definitely help out with that kind of advice. We work with a third party, Ecolabs, that can help contain any residual probiotics in the lines.
So getting to the spore-borne ones, what is the downside?
I would say the biggest downside is it doesn't have the clinical support.
I was talking in terms of production, but that's a good point too. But I'm thinking in terms of, I mean, if you've got the lactobacillus in a product, crank the heat up, it's done. Yep. Or if you wash with water, more than likely it's done. Yep. But when you're doing a crossover with the spore-forming ones, is that the same issue, or do you have to be more intensive?
There is more intensive. There's cleaning procedures that you have to follow in order to make sure that everything is cleaned up, basically. And yes, it's a little more tricky in that regard, but it's definitely something that, as long as you keep it in mind, it's manageable.
Okay. But these were probably talking more beverage type products, more along those lines.
That's correct. Yeah, we actually do have a clean fill hood in our facility where we work with any spore formers. That's where we dose it at. That way it doesn't get all out into the air intake system in our whole facility.
So I'm sorry, I'm chuckling here because I can remember opening bags and literally dumping them into a mixer. It was flowing everywhere, you know.
Yeah, yep. And with the lactic acid bacteria, that would be fine. But in the spore formers, you really don't want to have it going into your air handling system, if possible.
Right, because it's going to get in everything, especially if you've got no mitigation with regard to temperature and like that.
Exactly.
I'm assuming you see some of this in, when you say nutrition bars, we're talking low sugar, low fat, you know who they are, as just a value added, or are people engineering their product around probiotics?
I would say both. It's kind of a decision that the customer needs to make. If they want to, like I said, whenever we go into this project, these projects, it's kind of a two-pronged approach. Sometimes the customer comes to us and says, I have a product that I want to put probiotics in. And we work with them to get the water activity and the pH correct. That way it can survive. But also on the other end of the spectrum, sometimes the brand owner will come to us and just say, what can you do with probiotics? And we'll give them some concepts that we've worked on throughout the years. And then they can take that and run with it.
I think it's interesting that you go in there and help them with their process. Well, you got any horror stories?
I don't have any horror stories. No, I'm sorry. I have not really had any terrible experiences in plants. It's all been good.
Wow. Okay.
sorry. There's no drama there.
It's not like we all have horror stories. Wow. You're the first one. I don't have a whole lot of experience in the beverage side. Can you speak to that as far as processing, addition, that kind of thing?
Timing? As far as processing goes?
Well, if you're doing a beverage, what are your parameters there? What kind of process technologies are you looking at? I mean, obviously, in chocolate, dump it in, temper it, mold it, it's done. Same with a filling, I assume, as long as you don't see the temperature. But when it comes to beverages, a lot of people probably have questions that I don't have answers for. What kind of processing parameters are we looking for in a beverage or a liquid or something like that?
Pretty much typical processing, and that's kind of outside of I've actually worked in beverages for about 5 or 6 years previously to working in the bars, snacks, and confectionaries group. So I'm not an expert on the beverage side of things, but just seeing how they run things, and they run their normal process, I believe. But the thing about beverages is they mostly get refrigerated. So, and they have a shorter shelf life as well. When we're talking about chocolate, you know, you have a year shelf life at least, as well as snacks and other things. And if you're talking about a kombucha or some other kind of beverage, you're going to have a much shorter shelf life.
When you're using this in a bar application, are you actually putting it into the bar itself, or are you putting it in a coating, or both?
It depends on the water activity of the bar. I would say typically it's best to go into a chocolate piece or into the coating. The chocolate seems to have a protective functionality.
Right. The crystal matrix is going to do a lot to contain.
Yes.
Curious about how you mitigate the heat. If you're putting in a bar and there's no coating on it, how you mitigate the heat on the extruders while still maintaining throughput.
Yeah, that's definitely a challenge for us. And the thing is, if you have an extruded bar like that, more than likely the water activity is going to be far too high to support probiotic growth, unless you use spore farming probiotics, in which case you can just dump it in, you know, you can have it in the front end of the process. And the other end of things, if you use it, you would try to do some kind of drizzle on top. We've looked at that, or something after the processing.
Yeah, that's true too, because the percentage, from my experience, is so ridiculously small as to not really affect viscosity or anything like that. So even if you're doing a little drizzle or a bottom application, it's still going to be enough to get you what you need.
Yeah, we're talking the very low amounts that you're putting in there.
So Michael, you mentioned fibers. Can you speak to use of those in the previously mentioned applications?
Sure. Polydextrose is a great fiber, and it can go into any of the above areas that we were speaking about. It works very well in chocolate at replacing sugar, as well as syrups within bars and granola. It works very good as the binder syrup. So it works well with reducing sugar as well as adding total fiber to the final product.
Is there any nutrition issue with regard to it? Will probably spike your sugar count somewhere, your carb count somewhere.
It does raise the carb count up, but it does not add to the sugar. So that's the benefit of it.
Okay. You also mentioned protein. What kind of proteins do you guys work with?
We have plant-based proteins mostly. So we work with soy mostly, but we also have some pea offerings, both in the powdered form as well as nuggets, basically is what we call them, extruded pieces in soy and in pea protein, and many different kinds too, different types, sizes and shapes, and some cocoa flavored ones and things like that.
So you're talking like crisps or something like that.
Crisps, yeah, that's
Okay,
exactly right.
I'm thinking pure protein because I'm going to ask you, are you getting any pushback on allergen issues in the soy?
Sometimes it seems to be, it kind of comes in waves, you know. So sometimes whatever is a hot item as far as being attacked by the press and the media, but soy right now seems to be pretty good. It's pretty hot. So it's not really an issue. But in that case, we do, if it is an issue, that's one of the reasons why we have pea protein as another option.
Right. Because I know we've dealt with that. Sometimes we get, I mean, we work with alternate proteins as well. But yeah, sometimes we get, depending on where it's coming from, a lot of pushback. Do you have any other than soy? I've actually had people ask, you know, can you do something other than soy? Less than, even though we both know there's probably a ridiculously low amount of allergen issue from less than in chocolate.
Yeah, we do have a sunflower lecithin as an alternative too. So
Oh,
we
yeah,
try
we
to
do.
have.
That seems to be growing as well.
Yeah.
So generally at this point, I ask if you've got anything you want to plug, if there's anything you want to talk about, if there's anything else you want to say about you. As a member of PMCA, how long you've been a member? Have we ever done anything for you as far as student level or anything like that?
So I think we're on the 25 plus years exhibitor on the PMCA. So I missed last year not being able to go, and so I hope that maybe next year we're going to be able to be in person and see you guys all again. That was
Oh, yeah, full
definitely
sprint.
one of the highlights of my year, is going to the PMCA with Joan and Kathy for sure.
We're not going to tell any Jones stories here. I'm going to leave it at that. So, yeah, anything else you want to throw in? Anything else you want to add?
Just that, you know, IFF now they're not just flavors anymore. We have proteins, fibers, probiotics, it's colors. So basically all ingredients that you can use to make a final product almost we offer nowadays. So it's definitely an exciting opportunity for us, and it opens a whole world of new products and ingredients that we can offer. So I'm very excited, and it's a great opportunity for me and our company, I think, and we're going to go in new directions.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm glad we had a chance to talk. Once again, this has been Michael Jinks from IFF. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
This has been another episode of PMCA Research Chat. Please subscribe and like us on your podcast service. Check us out at PMCA.com, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.